Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, you ready for some Penn State football talk?
Penn State football talk and Penn State football talk only, Jimmy, right?
Today. That's it. We're not going to get off topic today. We're going to stick to our topic.
What our fans want, right? They don't mind us talking a little bit about college football, but at the end of the day, they're just like, okay, yeah, I kind of enjoy that, but give me my Penn State stuff. I want my Penn State. So let's give it to them, Jimmy.
Let's do it. Andy, we had a topic that we were originally going to do last week. We pushed it back, but we will get to it today. And we're going to talk about Penn State's coaching staff, some of the position coaches. And this was prompted by one of our listeners with a question. That was Daniel from Bell Vernon.
Yeah.
It's now been a couple weeks, but here was his question, just so everybody knows where we're coming from. Jim and Andy, love your show, and I listen faithfully every week. Fridays can't come quickly enough. I had to read that part, Andy, just because we never get tired of hearing those kind of things. But I would enjoy and believe many other Nittany Lions football diehards like me would also enjoy your analysis of our coaching staff. May I suggest your ranking of all the position coaches from strongest to weakest based on the following factors: recruiting prowess, player development, value delivered, potential for advancement, and loyalty. So, Daniel, you ask, you shall receive. Now, we'll probably change the format a little bit from what Daniel was looking for, Andy. I'm not going to ask you to rank them. I'm not sure. I think that's a little bit apples to oranges when making those kind of comparisons.
Yeah, I agree. And he did have a strong group of criteria, and as I was putting this together for each coach, I'm not sure I met every single one of his demands for every single coach, but there's generally, you know, at least three or so in there of, you know, what he's looking for and what I think and what I've seen and, you know, what I believe is today and going forward. And we're not doing any type of ranking system, but, you know, I'm just sort of saying what I think and what we think. But here's the one thing. And he asked about recruiting. If you're on James Franklin's staff, you better be at least very good at recruiting. That I'm just going to say that up front. There is a demand that James puts on his assistant coaches as a recruiter because it's the demand he puts on himself. So I didn't delve a whole lot into these guys as recruiters per se, but on the other fronts, Daniel, right, in Bell Vernon.
Yes.
Yeah, Daniel, I think we got you covered here. And this was fun. This is good stuff, too, because this is part of what you're going to see from Penn State in 2024 is going to be tied directly to a lot of these coaches.
And a couple things, too, Andy, before we get started, is I think that recruiting has to be an aspect of what the assistant coaches do, obviously. But I also think sometimes it's, I don't want to say overlooked, but damning with faint praise when they say, oh, James, he's a good recruiter, meaning he's not a great coach. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that recruiting, like it's all snake oil and just personality, and it's not. And it's one of the most, if not the most important aspects of a coach. If you can't acquire the talent, you're not going to be very good. Don't care how good a developer you are. If you don't have talent to work with, you're not going to succeed at big-time college football. A couple other things. Daniel mentioned potential for advancement and loyalty. I think sometimes that could be contradictory. You know, the loyal guy stays. The guy with potential for advancement probably moves elsewhere for a higher position. The other thing I want to point out, two more things, Andy. We're not going to go with the coordinators. They're new, a little bit tougher, different criteria for them. And the second thing is I want to mention overall I think James Franklin has done a great job in hiring, okay? It doesn't mean everyone, every hire he's had has been a hit. He's had some misses. Just look at offensive coordinator and wide receiver. But to his credit, I think he has either fixed or looked to fix his mistakes, which I think is to his credit. A few years back, if you remember, he was being criticized for being too loyal and not making the changes quick enough. But I think over the last couple of years, just see Kirk Ciarrocca, you know, he's
Mike Yurcich fired.
Exactly. And I think these were at the time, I think everybody lauded him for those picks. They didn't work out. He moved on. Credit to him. All right, Andy. Now that we're through all of that, let's start on the offensive side of the ball.
Cool.
And let's start there. And let's start in the trenches. Let's start with Phil Troutwine at offensive line. He got here in 2020 after doing what most people considered a very good job up at BC. What is your take on Phil Troutwine?
So like you said, this will be his fourth season. These are his guys. So this is his offensive line. Out of the gate, it was mixed results, right? He came in as, you know, a younger, more energized, a little bit different concepts and coaching styles and teaching styles. And you heard all of this about him. And then you spent 2 years wondering kind of what the heck this was all about, right? Like, at least in the first season and maybe in the second season, you're like, you know, is Phil Troutwine, you know, not as his job in danger, but there's a little bit of heat in his kitchen because everything that, you know, you sort of heard about him, I ain't seeing it. I ain't seeing much of it. But, you know, James gave him the rope and gave him a little bit of line to work with. And he has fully found his stride. He's starting to put this position group in a spot that you could consider it to be dominant. He built the offensive line over his 4 years. Yeah, you're always looking at the front guys. But to me, I think he built this from the back forward. In other words, he knew he was going to get guys and he had to do some work on the recruiting trail. He really did have to do some work and get some players for the front end. But now he has built this just as strong, maybe even a little bit, you know, stronger than most going into this year on the back end. And I really honestly feel he had talent. He sent two tackles to the NFL and a center last year. So I really feel that this line is in position. The next step is, can this group be dominant? And I think they're close. I think the potential is there in 2024. I think when I think of Phil Troutwine, I think great promise, low yield early, and now you're starting to understand and get it. He's exactly who they promised he was when he hired him. That's what we're getting now, and that's what you want out of him. Can they hold him? Is he, you know, he's young enough. Is he a climber? I don't know. But he certainly has grown into the job at Penn State. Because if you think back at the beginning when he started his tenure, the offensive line was a bit of a mess. And he had a reclamation project to do. And in 4 years to take it from it wasn't that he was terrible in the beginning. I just expected a little bit more of a jump based on what, you know, you were told he was going to bring to the table. It just took a little time. He's exactly who you thought he was and is coaching exactly like he said he would. You have to respect that. I think to take this position in 4 years and sort of put it on the precipice being dominant is impressive to me.
He's done, I think, a great job. It's an example of showing a little bit of patience because from where the offensive line was just a few years ago, he's built it. You're seeing now sending players to the NFL. You're seeing more depth. And I think most important to me, Andy, is I can see the future also with the recruits that they're bringing in, which is both an example of what he's doing, himself recruiting, but also the reputation being formed by that unit so that you can bring in guys like, remember, Javon Williams, Birchmeyer came in very highly regarded, and then you have Adonka coming in, not nearly as highly regarded, but I think could be your starting right tackle as a redshirt freshman. We see a Cooper Cousins coming in. And now just this past week, we see a top 100 offensive lineman commit for the 26th season. So it looks, we look at the recent past, three guys to the NFL. We look at the unit now in the present, looks pretty good. Yep. Look to the future. So you can't compliment someone much more than that. Quickly, let's get to Danny O'Brien, the new quarterback coach, Andy. He took that role over after Mike Yurcich was let go. Your early thoughts on Danny O'Brien?
So this one's pretty simple. It's his first season, right? Like you said, he took over for Yurcich after he was fired last year in season. Drew Aller is the biggest recruit at the position in the Franklin era. No pressure. It's just you have to coach the guy who's the biggest recruit after a good but not great year. I think Danny O'Brien's job won in 2024. Yeah, there's a lot of elements to it. I think success will be measured if he can help Drew Aller become a confident and convicted quarterback at the position. That will be the measuring stick for me. If you can instill and get Drew Aller to a point of confidence, you've done your job well. But there is, it's Drew Aller. It's the biggest recruit. There is a little bit of pressure on him. Mechanics and completion percentage and all that stuff, I'm throwing that to the side. Can you turn him into a confident and convicted quarterback and by coaching him, help him get there? That's the biggest step for me, and that would be a huge step forward for Danny O'Brien. Younger guy, is he the right guy for the job? Smells that way.
He's also so new that you can't get a final reading. However, all the early indicators are good, and that's based on so many – the young quarterback, Drew Aller, who was thought to be, hey, that's Yurcich's guy. There was concern, would Drew Aller leave once Mike Yurcich was let go? No, and he pointed to Danny O'Brien. And all these young quarterbacks coming in, like Ethan Grunkmeyer, they point to Danny O'Brien as the reason why they're here at Penn State. That's a good start, Andy. Now let's see what he could do on the development front. That's it for quarter one. We got lots more to go. Stick with us.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show. We are taking a look at our Penn State position coaches, and we are hitting position coaches. We're not going to do the coordinators today. And we thank Daniel from Bell Vernon for this idea. He sent this in as one of his questions, which is an indicator. If there's some topic you'd like to hear us talk about, just send it in as a question to ask Andy, all right? Let's continue on the offensive side, Andy. We talked about Phil Troutwine, the offensive line coach. We talked about Danny O'Brien, the quarterback coach. Let's go to the running backs, and Juwan Sider, been around since 2018, tremendous reputation as a recruiter, especially in the state of Florida. They've been able to retain him now for several years. Your thoughts on Sider?
Yeah, he coached running backs at Marshall, West Virginia, his alma mater, and Florida before, like you mentioned, he came to Penn State. He's an exceptional recruiter, Jimmy, exceptional recruiter. And he's a master at evolving talent at the position in the modern game and figuring out that delicate balance of a crowded house in terms of options at the running back position. Look, Penn State's kind of a little bit of got an RBU, right? Reputation. That's for a reason. And I'd say, you know, the players, they're responsible for that, but the guy behind pulling all the strings, doing all the grungy work, that's Jawan Sider. He's a big reason why it's RBU. I think he's one of the best in the business in college football as a position coach on all fronts. All that Daniel from Bell Vernon laid out in his criteria, Jawan Sider checks every box above board. I think he's one of the top five running back position coaches in the country, simply one of the best.
And I'm glad you pointed out the fact that he's been able to manage a crowded running back room.
Yep.
And there was a bit of a downturn a couple years ago. There were players who came in who disappointed some highly ranked guys. And I don't think you could put the lack of development then on Sider because he's proved himself over and over again. But to your point, you've got two star running backs who split the carries almost 50-50, and we have not heard one complaint from either one of them about sharing the load. He has convinced them not just to share the load, but to be enthusiastic blockers for each other, supporters of each other. He's done a great job. He'll start to get tested again a little bit next year when these two guys, Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, move on to the next level, Andy. But I'm pretty confident he'll do okay, and he's got some players to work with.
Remember Journey Brown. Whenever you think of Jawan Sider, just remember Journey Brown, right? That's an evolution of a back, and he knows how to build it.
And what could have been there, Andy.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a couple more players to go through on the offensive side. Let's go with Marcus Hagans, the new guy at wide receiver. And this is his second year. It's been a revolving door of coaches at wide receiver, which can be one of those you want to get the right guy in there, but when you have this revolving door, you never get the chance to establish anything. But if there's a coach, a position coach who has a little bit of heat on him, it's probably Marcus Hagans, Andy.
That could be, yeah, you might think so. I mean, he spent 11 seasons at Virginia before he came to Penn State. And all indications are from inside and fellow coaches and everything that you hear. And he's an outstanding human being of the highest caliber, right? Like, that's not what we're talking about. And here's what I'm going to look. He inherited a mess, right? And 1 year is not a judgment made, for that would be unrealistic, in my opinion. You did not see much of the needle being moved forward last year. In fact, you can make an argument that as a whole, the wide receiver position, as the season moved on, regressed, and it continued to regress even down the stretch. You didn't even see a little step forward while the regression was happening. So I think he needs to make some kind of jump this year. He needs to move the needle. Just even a little bump at the position would be helpful for him. Does he have the right guys for it? It seems like he's got a little bit better, you know, one or two guys at the top to work with. Can he make it so? A little bump. I'm not talking a big bump. I'm not talking the wide receivers go from, you know, the dog in the kennel of the offense to the, you know, dogs running around in a pack. It doesn't have to be outstanding. It just has to be a little bump, Jimmy. Just make sure the position as a whole doesn't regress. Individual talent development has been lacking a little bit at the position, and collectively that combination with not being very well recruited position has shown its teeth And that is something that they have to take out of this offense, or otherwise this offense could struggle a little bit.
Andy, I often in our conversations, not just you and I, but with everybody else on our show, I will make the comparison to private industry, the working world. I do that with players where I think fans often get upset that players go somewhere for the NIL money. And my response is, you'd probably go for the money too if you were offered another job with better pay. It's human nature. It's the way things work. Well, I'm also going to use the private industry analogy here with the wide receivers, which if you've ever been in a position where you go into a new company, new job as a manager of a division or a group, and you were brought in because things are a mess, okay? It's hard to turn that mess around in one day.
Right.
And part of the job is you got to filter out the wheat from the chaff, you know? You've got to make that changeover. And I'm wondering if the change, you saw a number of wide receivers leave the program after this season. Not to take a shot at any individual players, that's not the aim here, but I'm wondering if that's just part of clearing things out to allow Marcus Hagans to bring in his guys. Now, the next part of that transition, just like it is in private industry, bring in your people, bring in the right people. Now, the unfortunate thing, and it's only been a year, Penn State has had a little bit of a tough time on the recruiting trail, and specifically at wide receiver.
Correct.
So we have not, I would say Marcus Hagans hasn't really passed that first test on the recruiting side. I know there's a lot of other things involved in it, NIL and everything else, but I understand when you say we need to see at least a little improvement.
Right.
I guess I want to see more than a little.
No.
Because from where they're coming from, Andy, this is where you should see some jump. We shall see. I'm hopeful for it because I do think there's some talent in that room, Andy. They haven't shown the improvement before. He's cleared things out a bit. I think it's time. Again, showing quite a bit of improvement doesn't mean they have to be great. I'm not sure it even means they have to be above average, Andy. I would take average. Just get to that point, and it would be quite an improvement. All right, we've got a couple minutes left. Maybe my favorite coach on the staff, Andy, is Ty Howell at tight end. If you want to judge results, past, present, future, they all look fantastic at tight end. And some credit needs to go to Ty Howell, who's been here since 2020.
Yeah, he's kind of like one of those, like you don't really hear much about him as, you know, per se as the coach, you know, okay, that much. He's a legacy guy, right? Like, so this will be his fourth season at Penn State, and he's not even 35 years old yet, Jimmy. So, I mean, he played for the Nittany Lions from 09 to 13. He was an offensive lineman. He embarked on a coaching career right away. In 4 years, kind of quietly, and I think in a very subtle way, no matter how much, whether it was known, high end, the development on the back end at the wide receiver position at the tight end position has always put Penn State sort of in this position where you were talking about two or three guys that could potentially be, you know, high end tight ends contributors at that position. That's impressive work to me. Above all else, his body of work in 4 years as the Penn State tight ends coach, what stands out to me more than anything is the development from A to Z as a college tight end and moved on to the NFL, Brenton Strange, right? Had some tools, had some shortcomings, development, had to learn to be a blocker. That's his body, what he does at that position, all of it as the coach in 4 years was epitomized to me in the development of Brenton Strange. And all of this is done less than 10 years in coaching, Jimmy. Less than 10 years as a coach. Simply now, a great coach at that position.
Andy, he also walked into a better situation than, say, Marcus Hagans did, you know, with the you tradition think? There at tight end. But what I really like about tight end, and I mentioned this with Phil Troutwine at offensive line, are you getting to the point where the reputation, the past is good, the present looks good, and the future looks so promising? That means you've been developing. You're because you have that history, it's easier to recruit, but you are recruiting well. But I'll add one more thing at the tight end position, Andy, is there's always that pecking order. Here's number one, here's number two, here's number three. And every year, number one goes to the NFL, number two bumps up to number one. And is there any doubt, Andy, that Tyler Warren's going to be number one and then move on to the NFL? No, there is no doubt. Now, the only question this year is there's enough talent coming up and young talent. We're not quite sure about two and three. It'll probably be Khalil Dinkins, but then you have a couple more opportunities for the third guy. I mean, we're discussing the promise of the number three tight end. And Andy, the good news is they've been so good that you start to say, you know what? We got to put multiple of these guys on the field because they're that good, and you arrange the offense around them. You do that for a reason. There's talent there. Love me some Ty Howell. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter two. Get set for Ask Andy coming next.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. That means it's time to ask Andy. This is where we're going to take your questions for Andy. If you want to send in yours, simple. Download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Andy button, and away you go, just like Joe from Scranton did. And Joe says, guys, can you tell me why you, along with Jim, believe that we're out of the playoffs if we lose to West Virginia? First, I believe we have a distinct advantage in talent, plus we don't give up big plays. West Virginia isn't explosive, but they have a power running back in Donaldson. Jim and you have the most pessimistic view of the team. T. Frank provides a much better analysis. All right. For T. Frank, I thank you on that, and we won't argue. He has fantastic analysis. However, Andy, I'm going to field this question first before I allow you to respond. Joe, I think you misunderstood our entire premise. I don't think Andy or I were predicting that Penn State was going to lose to West Virginia. My statement, and I'm the one who made it, was that if they lose to West Virginia, I think that essentially will eliminate them from the playoffs. Looking forward, I think if they, of course, if they went undefeated the rest of the way, 11-0 the rest of the way, they make the playoffs. I don't think they would go 11-0 the rest of the way. I think they would lose at least one game, let's say, maybe to the Buckeyes, become 10-2. And I think come playoff time with 12 teams and they need a tiebreaker, I think a loss to a Big 12 team, especially if West Virginia wins the Big 12, maybe that's different. I don't foresee that, Andy. And I think a loss to West Virginia would kill Penn State when it comes time to do the 10-2 tiebreakers. What do you say?
Yeah, I think you're wrong. I just think you're wrong. I see Penn State making the playoffs as, you know, if they're 10-2, I still think they're an at-large team. That's how I see their path to the playoffs. I don't think a loss to West Virginia puts them in a must-win for the next 11 games. I still think at 10-2 being in the Big Ten, they can make it. I think you're wrong. I don't think they lose. I don't think they're a team that would. I don't think they're going to lose the West Virginia game. I don't think I've ever given that premise. I think it is a tough opener. I think it could be a tough game. I think it looks a lot like Purdue 2 years ago. It's going to be a grind. I think Penn State is a more talented team and the better team. I thought it would be closer last year, and Penn State opened up a can of whoop you know what on them, right on top of them, just gave West Virginia. If Penn State makes its talent shine, I don't think West Virginia has any say in the outcome of this game at all, in any way, shape, or form. So there's a reason Penn State's going to be a solid favorite in this game. I just think it's a sticky wicket playing at West Virginia opener. Right now, West Virginia believes it's as good as Penn State. They're not. But at the end of the day, you saying if they lose, if Penn State comes out on the wrong end of this and they need to win, you're just wrong. I'm sorry, you're just wrong.
Well, Andy, I will accept that you say that. I don't agree, obviously. But I think the important point here, Joe, is we did not feel like neither one of us is saying Penn State's going to lose to West Virginia. We're not.
They could.
It's conceivable, but little sneak preview, when I make my picks, I'm not going to be picking West Virginia to win this game, okay? And Andy, the fact is, you and I, our disagreement is about the playoff ramifications of this. And I think Joe confused that with, we actually thought West Virginia would win the game. But speaking of disagreements between you and I, let's go to our friend Tim in Port Matilda, who says, Jim, smack Andy. I was floored when he said that Penn State hasn't done enough to deserve the conference to cater to them for one game in the whiteout. Penn State's spectacle is literally known worldwide. There are several reaction videos from people all across the world marveling at the show. Plus, it doesn't even make sense for Fox to keep on doing this. For example, if Ohio State Penn State is big noon, it's going to get massive numbers. But you can't look at me with a straight face and tell me it wouldn't do even better numbers if that game was at night. Fox is depriving themselves of a night game that 9 times out of 10 is going to completely own the ratings for that Saturday. Not just because of the matchup, but optics transcend that when it's a big-time game. Fox, learn flex scheduling. All right, Andy, here's another chance for you to say I am wrong. Go ahead.
I'm standing on that mountain. I don't think the Big Ten Conference, when it comes to Fox, because it's a money thing in between. Fox has the money. Fox is going to make the calls. You know, Tim, you're right about that. It's time for Fox to learn flex scheduling. But I don't think the conference uses its one chip. That's Ohio State and Michigan. And I think that's earned. I just don't feel that a second chip, and I don't think Penn State's earned it with the win. Do I love it? Do I think it's one of the greatest spectacles? Yes! I do. I love it. I think it's one of if not the greatest, it is one of the two greatest spectacles in all of college football. End of story right there. Just, you listen to other players. I listen to some NFL player talk about it in a podcast. Like, he transferred into the Big Ten and then he ended up playing at Penn State in a whiteout. And he was like, what the heck is this? So I don't disagree with it that way. I just don't think Penn State deserves that sort of next level, you know, for the Big Ten to say, we demand Penn State have this game as a night out. It comes down to choices, and I just don't think they've earned it. I'll continue to stand on my mountain, Tim, and, you know, Jimmy, you can smack me around next time I see you.
All right, well, let's start with this, Tim. Andy continues to be wrong on this issue, and let me express it to you this way, Andy. I've often presented it to you as this is the conference, the networks acquiescing to Ohio State and Michigan. And they are. They acquiesce to them. Okay. Yep. They bend over backwards for those two teams. However, with that said, it's also the networks feel like, you know what? Ohio State, Michigan always gets great numbers. Okay. So you could look at it from the television side, the network and conference side, it's also in their best interest because they get the ratings, they get the numbers for that game. But the fact is, it's best not only for those teams, Michigan and Ohio State, but it's also good for the conference. I will make the same argument for the whiteout. Now, you might say Michigan and Ohio State is even bigger number. That's fine. And I won't debate that. But the whiteout also is good business, not just for Penn State, but for the Big Ten Conference and for the networks covering it.
Agree.
Tim is right. The optics, the night game whiteout is special. It draws eyeballs to the TV. This is in the best interest of the teams, the conference, the networks. Instead of it just saying like, oh, Penn State deserves it. No, this is the smart decision, Andy. It's the smart decision. The dumb decision is we're not going to do anything to make it the best game possible and make it at night. That's the dumb thing. That's the dumb thing this conference is doing. It's the dumb thing these networks are doing. And the unfortunate thing is if the whiteout were something that happened at Ohio State or Michigan, I suspect they would bend over backwards for them because they're Michigan and Ohio State, no matter what. I'm not letting you respond, Andy. I'm taking the last word. I'm only kidding. Go ahead. Give your response.
No. I just want to say I do agree with you. I just don't think Penn State's earned the right as Penn State saying, hey, we think we deserve the right for this to be the night game. It is a smart decision. It's stupid not to make it a night game. It's just stupid.
It really is. And the networks could easily fix this without hurting anyone or anything, Andy. That's why I say it's dumb. And I think that Pat Kraft is aware of it. He's acknowledged it. But this is also, how many years in a row did we go where Penn State's opener was on the road? That's a distinct disadvantage. And it went on for years. Would that have ever happened to Michigan or Ohio State? No, Andy. No, it would not. Okay. And I also blame Penn State and its administration for not kicking up enough dirt and saying to the Big Ten Conference, this is unacceptable. And that's what they should have done. All right, let's move on. Let's get to Matt in Massachusetts, who says, by the way, I really went off there on a tirade, didn't I, Andy?
Yes, you did.
Salty Jim has to make his appearance every once in a while, Andy. Let's go to Matt in Massachusetts. Says, Jim and Andy, as we will see the impact of NIL on the upcoming seasons, do you foresee that incoming college coaches, new or transferred, will be required to have experience handling the NIL aspect of team management and recruiting as it has quickly become so dominant?
Oh, good. Good question, Matt. I would think by now, yes. I'm saying yes. I was thinking about this the other day when I was watching a thing about NFL scouting and one team in particular, my team. But I think there's an additional responsibility. Like, college football coaches always had to scout young talent at the high school level, obviously, because that's recruiting. But I think now they also have to be part-time, sort of partial NFL scouts as well, because they have to recruit now seasoned veteran players, right? Like, they never had to recruit, you know, sort of in the transfer portal, they never had to recruit players that had 2-3 years of experience under their belt. You know what I mean? So now they have to sort of scout a little bit differently. So good question. Yes, I am now convicted to say I think it's something that, you know, head coaches and athletic directors and those who make the hiring and firings are going to have to look at it.
Andy, and yes, and it's going to be continually changing.
Correct.
We've got both this $20-some million that the schools themselves will be able to distribute to student athletes, plus then I don't know if you've seen, but in this new agreement, they're talking about actually policing NIL.
I saw that.
Where they have to be actual real NIL. We'll see how that works out. But I think the thing that's part of this is money management. It's like having a salary cap. how do I distribute my dollars? That's really changed the game. Just this week, we saw a player, Andy. He committed to Alabama, then Auburn, then Alabama, then Auburn. He's made four commitments to those two schools. All right, that's it for quarter three. And Ask Andy, we're going to get back to our position coaches analysis when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. Andy and I are talking about the position coaches in quarter one and two. We handled the offense. Quarter three was all about Ask Andy and me proving Andy wrong multiple times. That's become a regular of our show, Andy, by the way. I know you disagree with that, but that's okay. Let's move on to quarter number four. We're going to talk defense. We're only doing one segment with the defense. There's not as many guys to talk about.
Right.
Plus, we're not doing the coordinators, which means we're not doing linebacker, which is Tom Allen's responsibility, the next coordinator. But let's talk about the guys that are there. Let's start with the veterans. Let's go to the defensive backfield, Andy. Let's start with Terry Smith, the cornerbacks coach. He's been around since 2014, Andy, which, boy, that's a lifetime in the college football world.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, because when I put my stuff down to talk about Terry Smith, I was like, this will be his 11th season at Penn State. Why does it feel like he's been there so much more longer for some reason, right? Like, he's a legacy. He coached – now, he was a very successful high school coach at Gateway High School out in suburban Pittsburgh. Very good coach. I covered him many times as a high school football coach. Really good. And just great guy. I love Terry. I'm a fan of Terry Smith. And I thought he was a good coach. Then he transitioned to the college game, and he spent one season at Temple before James brought him to Happy Valley. James was like, that's one of my guys. And so he coaches the cornerbacks. He's a legacy. Cornerback, even over this long-term tenure, cornerback has never had a season as a glaring weakness during his tenure. That's simply the way you characterize what he is as a coach. They've never had, like, you've never, I was trying to think back, when did I think, you've always had, there's questions, but in the end, did you ever identify cornerback as a glaring weakness for Penn State? And I had a hard time finding, like, yeah, I couldn't find where the position overall was a glaring weakness during his tenure. There's obviously been some high-end development. I think some of his best work, he's had a lot of talent to work with because, dude, he could flat-out recruit. I think one of the best sort of development of a single player that is reflective of who Terry Smith is as a coach is Daquan Hardy. He became a little bit of a – he was a slot guy, but he became a little bit more of a jack of all trades towards the end. And that is what Terry Smith started out doing and what Terry Smith has continued to do for Penn State. He's a legacy. He's not really going anywhere. He's happy. This is where he wants to be. And he's exceptional at his job. I think he's a little underrated on the national picture because nobody kind of sees him as a climber. Like, Terry doesn't really want to go anywhere else. Terry doesn't really want to coach anything else. And he's never sort of made that, put himself out there like that. That just means he's comfortable in his own skin.
Andy, in Daniel's set of criteria for the coaches, one of them was loyalty. And I think Terry Smith being around this long, yeah, I guess you file that under loyalty, and it's been impressive for him to be here this long. But also, I think, if anything, this coming season could have been a test for him. He lost all three of his starters, counting Daquan Hardy as the slot guy. All three moved on. All three were very good. And guess what? Because of his reputation and the reputation of the cornerback room at Penn State, they were able to bring in multiple transfer portal guys. So the fact that Terry Smith is good at his job and has created this reputation, just like you talked about Juwan Sider and RBU, you could also talk about CBU. Penn State has created that reputation. So even when they lost three starters and they need to backfill a bit, they were very much able to do that in an excellent way. I think we all feel pretty confident in the cornerback room, Andy. All right, let's move on to the rest of the defensive backfield, which is Anthony Poindexter. He's the safety coach. He's been here now since 21, Andy. That was after 10 years at Virginia. I believe he was a candidate for the Virginia head job a few years ago. So you talk about guys being a climber or not. He seemed like a potential guy to move on fairly quickly. I suppose he could still move on, get a promotion somewhere. By the way, he didn't get the defensive coordinator job here at Penn State when it was open. He's done a great job with the safeties.
Yeah, I think he deservedly was looked at as a serious candidate, but I think in the end, James went with the Manny Diaz model, I'm hiring a head coach thing, but I think he was given serious consideration. He took over a position where you knew they were recruiting talent. So recruiting at the safety position was never really a problem at Penn State. It was the development of that sort of pecking order we talked about with Ty Howell at, like, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. Did you see that? He has developed that, and he's developed some obviously really good guys and sent him to the NFL. He's exceptional as a safeties position coach, and I'll be honest, Jimmy, I don't feel he'll be in this role much longer. He's a DC before. He'll be a DC again. And you mentioned his 10 years at Virginia. He coached 8 NFL players in his 10 years at Virginia. Virginia, right? 8 NFL players. He sent, 4 safeties, maybe 5 safeties to the NFL under his tenure at Penn State. So he has taken the position where they never really had a question of talent. They had a question of productivity, and the safeties were not becoming elite. He fixed that immediately. So I think he is exceptional in his job, and you're gonna see it at another level this year. I can't wait to see it. I'm wait to see how he developed it. I think the sort of third defensive back, the guy in the box, is gonna be a safety. So he's gonna be, he's gonna have another, sort of role in this defense this year, other than the standard 2 safety role. I think he's got so much talent safety position, you're gonna see more out of safeties this year than ever. And I don't think that's a problem for Mr. Poindexter at all.
And this is like what I mentioned earlier with Ty Howell and the tight ends. They are so good in that room. You look to put a second and third one out there. And it's the same thing here. Now, understand that line position down and distance is going to often determine who's playing that line position. You may have an extra cornerback instead. However, with that said, I think the base to it is going to be a safety there because there is so much talent there. And we've seen this now. That legacy has been created, Andy, where year after year after year, it's a good room. You give them a gold star for how they developed the kids who came in from junior college and ended up in the NFL. Yeah, they went from junior college to star players to NFL players, Andy. That development is part of that. The whole safety room feel like it's in good hands. Cornerback the same way. You got experience there, talent, reputation, history, the recruiting aspect, all good things. You feel really good there. Now, Andy, we go to our last entry is at defensive line and Deion Barnes. Young guy, new guy. He started out as a grad assistant in 2020. Last year, he was made the position coach at defensive line. And James Franklin made a pretty strong point of not just handing the keys over to Deion Barnes. He had to go through the whole process, the interviewing process, other candidates he competed with. He ended up being the guy. What do you think of his job so far?
So he's a legacy, right? Just remember, it was just 10 years ago, Jimmy, he was getting ready for his final season of playing at Penn State. So now he is a position coach at Penn State. Yeah, he spent three seasons working with the defensive line before becoming the guy, right? So since 2020, he's had a role in developing what is clearly a laundry list of talented defensive linemen, inside and outside. He's going into his second year as the position coach. These are still the guys he helped develop. My only, you know, thought about Deion Barnes is what will it look like? He had a hand in these guys, but now he is selecting these guys. What will it look like with the guys that he selected, the one that he recruits and develops that are the lead dogs, not just has a hand in it? Sure, he's continuing the development as the defensive line position coach, but these are still not the guys that he picked to put in that pipeline. What does it look like when he's picking those guys to put in the pipeline? I'm not saying I doubt it in any way, shape, or form, because having a hand in development and the first year as a position coach, it looked pretty darn good. And all four of those defensive tackles came back for a reason, right, Jimmy? They all four came back for a reason. Each one of them has their own, but I think the common bond between each four of them was to spend another season being coached by Deion Barnes.
He's got off to a very good start, Andy. And I like when you promote from within, and I think James Franklin has done a good mix of promoting from within and bringing in new blood from the outside. We talked about, you know, Tom Allen getting the coordinator position over perhaps an Anthony Poindexter. But here on the flip side, you have Deion Barnes, the promotion from within. And he's also has a reputation as a very good recruiter,
yep,
especially in the Philadelphia area where Penn State has a new emphasis, Andy.
Yeah, and I also think when you're talking about Deion Barnes, yeah, he's an outstanding recruiter. He comes from Philly area. He knows the territory. But here's the other thing. When James was, you know, looking at this position, Deion Barnes was considered a dark horse. At the end of the day, I don't think Deion left James much choice but to pick him. That's a credit to Deion, right? Like, I think at the end of the day, Deion impressed James so much that James was like, the guy's right here. He's already here in front of me. I think James was looking outside first, and Deion said, no, I'm right here. No, I'm right here. Hey, coach, I'm right here.
And Andy, I'm going to do that analogy again to private industry. There are some places that they'll always promote from within. It's easier to do, keeps your people happy, that kind of thing. And sometimes things can get stagnant because of that. James Franklin doesn't just automatically hire from within. We see that. All right, Andy, that is it for our show. It went fast as always. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.